Whoa. Trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends Variety Hour, broadcasting from Pod Bay, sit and stay 82 feet above sea level at Intergalactic K9 Studios. We loosen your leashes, unlatch those cage doors, and distract your handlers to keep a shock collar of statism from being clamped down on your neck. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel the chain?
I can feel it. It's working.
Excellent. And as always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. All right. So we are back. We are the Freedom Fiends. I am Jeremy, here tonight with Shane. What's going on, my friend?
Well, I'm glad to be back after a couple weeks of not being on the air. Last weekend, I was in Virginia at a little get-together known as AnarchCon. And it's been it's hosted by the Liberate RVA guys out of Richmond, Virginia. And I think this was their third year for it, if I'm correct. But it's held on a 3,000-acre campsite on the side of a mountain. And before I went, I really had no idea what 3,000 acres was like. But after hiking some of their more difficult trails in the dark, during the rain, no less, I now have a lot of respect for what 3,000 acres really means.
Yeah, it's a huge patch of land.
Yeah. And I'm originally from Indiana, and it's completely flat out there. And I'm not used to, the mountains, at least. When I moved to Cincinnati, I got used to, like, some hills, but that AnarchCon was actually held out in the actual mountains, and the drive there was very interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, well, I really wanted to make it down there this year. It just wasn't in the cards for me, but at least the terrain would have been more up my alley, I guess, because that's kind of how I grew up. I grew up in the Pocono Mountains. So, you know, I grew up hiking and biking and skiing up and down hills. So, yeah, it definitely takes a little getting used to, because, I remember back in the day before I knew any better. And then after I did know better, when I would, like, bring friends along for, you know, to do certain things, it's like, if you mention, like, distance to anybody, they just, you know, they just think, oh, I've hiked that distance before, or longer than that, no big deal. But, you know, they don't take into account the elevation. Like, yeah, when you're going upward, you can't go as far distance wise as you think you can, because you run out of steam a lot quicker, you know, whether it's biking, whether it's hiking or biking. Because I used to do the mountain bike thing too. Same thing, you know, I could go for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles on flat surface, but you put a hill in front of you, and then it's going to take a little bit more work.
Oh yeah, and I've noticed the same thing when you're driving a car. It uses a lot more gas when you're going up and down rather than across a flat surface.
Exactly, but you need more power, you need more juice. Yeah, man.
I learned that one point go ahead. I was going to say, there was one point during our hike that the elevation I didn't take into account, and I don't know, we kind of thought we got lost for a little while, but I think Cal actually knew where we were. He was the one leading the hike, Cal Molinay. But I at one point had pulled out my device to try to get a GPS, you know, to figure out where we were. And out there, like, I have Verizon, and out there I guess everyone uses AT&T or something like that. But so I couldn't really get a good signal on my phone. But when I did, it showed that I was, like, only 1,000 feet from, like, the adjacent camp area to where we started out. So I was like, oh, well, we're only 1,000 feet away. Well, I was thinking in horizontal terms, and exactly. Didn't realize the vertical elevation that was also involved with that. So needless to say, I was really glad to see not only people, but the same people that we were looking for when we got back.
Yeah, that's always a good thing. It's I've taken those type of nighttime nature walks in the past before. They definitely make things interesting. But yeah, I'm glad you made it back safe and sound. But I know I talked to Lisa about this briefly last week after she returned, because she was down there with you. But I heard it rained a bunch, you know. But overall, it was a good time. You know, you're saying?
Yeah. Overall, it was a good time with good people. I didn't really get to, I mean, I haven't really known the East Coast anarchists that well. I mean, some of them I've been friends with online, but I made a lot of good friends, you know, this last week at the Anarchon. It was really cold and it was really rainy. I think some of the rain that we got was left over from the previous hurricane. And then
Harvey, right? That
there's another one on the way. Harvey, yeah.
Yeah.
So it was cold and rainy, but we had a lot of good time with good people. I think there may have been as many as a couple dozen people who attended, but I think only like a dozen of us actually stuck it out to the end through all the rain and stuff.
Wow.
But it was really nice to, you know, meet Cal once again and to finally meet fellow fiend Lisa. And we mostly sat around the campfire and told stories. We did actually have some debates that were lined up, which were supposed to be like devil's advocate debates, where we would have certain topics that we would take positions on that we didn't necessarily believe in. But that kind of just kind of devolved into what became like musical fallacies at one point, and we all just took turns throwing fallacies out at certain subjects. But it was a really good time to be had by all, and I recommend you know, more people attend next year, because you know, given that we have better weather and whatnot, then we could have probably a good turnout of at least, you know, 4 or 5 dozen instead of the couple dozen that probably came this year.
Yeah, well, I'm hopeful that I will be able to make it next year. I'm assuming they're going to do it. They seem to do it around this time of year, so I'm hopeful that a year from now I will finally be out of this horrible place and a lot more able to travel. So you know,
I think they originally held it in August, I think, in previous years, but last year and perhaps even the year before, they came up with hurricane problems during August. So they held it later in the year this year, and it just happened to come up on Labor Day weekend. And we were the first group of anarchists to arrive when we got there and didn't realize that there was going to be Labor Day campers up there as well.
Oh, yeah.
So I go walking up to people and be like, "Oh, are you here for Anarchon?" And they're like, "For what?"
Anar what?
They were just there for Labor Day. Yeah, they were just there for Labor Day. But there was a group of about a dozen or so of them that had a libertarian among them that one of us was talking to. So maybe there might have been one or two conversions that weekend. We don't know.
There you go. At the very least, hopefully planted some seeds, and then maybe you'll see a familiar face next year.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, the you know, especially on those shorter little festivals or camping trips or whatever like that, weather can play a huge role, unfortunately. You know, because like, you know, when we did, you know, in Michigan this year, it poured on us for that first day, but it was only that first day, and after that it was pretty good right. For the rest of the time. So, you know, but when you only have a weekend, yeah, it kind of stinks. I'm sure that definitely hurt the numbers. And I mean, if I had made it down there, I would have stuck it out, but that's just me, because, well, you know, if I had already driven all the way down that way, I'm not going to turn around.
Oh yeah,
you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had already come so far, and we were going to stick it out to the last day. And we're glad we did, because the sun came out and the temperature warmed up. And it was probably about 75, 80 degrees on the last day. So it was really nice.
Nice. How long did it take you guys to get down there from your place?
Well, it took us like 7 hours to get there and about 8 hours to get back.
That's a haul. I mean, I've done longer to Michigan. It would probably be even longer. It might be about the same time down there from where I am now. And I have no idea where I'll end up next year. But like I said, I plan on trying to make it next year.
But driving those mountain roads is interesting. We did borrow a Jeep for that trip, and we're glad we did. So yeah, once we got to the highway, it was a lot easier to drive the rest of the way home.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Well, yeah. Again, you know, if you're not used to driving on those, it can be, you know, treacherous, especially if you do it at night. I mean, heck, I'm used to it, because that's how I learned to drive, at least a little bit down in PA. And I did a lot of that, you know, I did a lot of the driving in that type of stuff. And then I've done a lot of trips upstate here in New York where I've had to drive through. Like there's when I was dating a girl that went to the College of Albany University years and years and years ago. I used to have to go up and visit her because otherwise I wasn't going to see her for very long periods of time. And as a younger man. in a lot better shape back then, I didn't want to wait that long, so I would make trips up there. I think every 2 weeks I was going up there, and then she was coming back home like once a month, but whatever. So like every 2 weeks I was driving up to Albany. And pretty much, You can either take the throughway, take the throughway the whole way, which is pretty, pretty straight relatively, but it costs you a lot of money with all the tolls and stuff like that. Or you could try to take the shortcut without a lot of the tolls, but it takes you smack through Bear Mountain, which you literally have to like drive along the side of the mountain, and it gets really insane.
Well, there is some of that. Yeah, there is some of that in Virginia. Yeah.
Anytime you have those hills like that, you're going to drive on those edge of the mountains, and at night, especially in a lot of those places where the elevation, and if you're having any kind of weird temperature changes too, it gets foggy really easily, and it always makes for an interesting drive.
It does get foggy here in the Ohio River Valley where I live, but the last day of the trip was really nice because we got good weather, and the drive home was actually in the sunshine, so I'm thankful for that it wasn't rainy. And we actually on the Sunday actually before we left, we got to go out to the shooting range, and one of our friends Colby, he brought out his whole arsenal for us to test fire, and it was pretty fun. He has this 50 caliber servo rifle, I think it's called, and it's got a tripod on it, but him and Cal were both standing and shooting it. It was awesome.
Wow, 50 cal.
He caught me off guard the first time he fired this, because I fired a 50 cal Desert Eagle pistol before, but the shell on this thing is just ginormous. This is like kind of like an armor piercing type rifle, and when he shot that thing, it made a shockwave. It sounded like a bomb went off. It was awesome.
Wow. Yeah, I don't think I've definitely never fired one. I'm trying to think. I don't think I've ever been actually present for the firing of anything that caliber.
had 100-yard
kind of rifle shooting and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think they had like 100-yard range with some metal targets in the back, and most of the rifles were dialed in with their scopes and stuff. But I was really amazed by this World War II Luger that was accurate at 100 yards. It was probably the most accurate gun there, seeing as how it was a pistol that could still hit the targets at 100 yards.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, very cool, man. I'm glad you had a good time, and definitely going to try to make it down there next year. We're going to head off to the market, and we shall return.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
How about a warning? You're about to share with my friend Michael W. Dean, a survivor, thinks about humanity and his methods for dealing with it. Brace yourself for some bare naked honesty. If you're willing to hear what Michael is saying, there are times when you'll laugh and times when you want to cry in the retelling of his truths. He has defined it so you can feel it. Take his example and live. I warned you earlier because this book is written in the same way Michael speaks. He's a straight shooter, a no pretense, a no excuses kind of guy that I love like a brother. Understanding how we are to deal with negative people, Michael has answers for you. The human race has its aberrations and monsters, and unfortunately, sometimes they are close to you. Michael gives you his take on them and how he handles the noise. I can guarantee you will pick up a tool to use from a user's manual for the human experience. As Michael says, his life is a teaching hospital.
A user's manual for the human experience. Kindle, paperback, and audiobook. Get it now on Amazon.
And we're back. And in the last segment, we were discussing Shane's recent trip to Anarchon, and he mentioned the weather that affected it there, probably coming off the tail end of the last hurricane we're dealing with. There's another one that's slamming down in the south, And yeah, man, it's crazy. I mean, we were just discussing before we came back, you know, the topic of generators came using power generators, and I was mentioning the last time I had to deal with that was during Sandy. So I you know, which was, I don't even remember. What was that, 2012, 2013? 2012, I think. But, you know, so I've been in the path of one of these things, and it kind of sucks, man. And you see all, like, I mean, I don't know, like, really have any close connection with too many people that are in, like, in any of these locations. But it's just horrible. Like, anytime I see that, and I don't pay attention to the news, but when I do see these pictures and stuff, it's just horrible to see, like, the devastation. I mean, you saw the stuff that was going on in Houston, which was, you know, which is horrific. And now, you know, poor Florida, which gets hit fairly regularly. It's kind of part of the, you know, part of the deal living down there. But this thing just seems to be, I mean, you're telling me before we started the show that you've seen some of the video and some of the pictures from some of the stuff that's happened. I haven't seen that much. I saw some of the pictures of what was going on in Key West earlier. And it's just, yeah, man, it's pretty insane.
Yeah, a lot of times the storm surge from the hurricane on one side will blow the water to the other side. And people in, like, Tampa Bay and stuff earlier were posting videos of their city was, like, going out to, the water was going out to sea, and the, like, they would go to the beach and there was no water. But they don't want to actually stay there and hang out, because on the tail end of that hurricane, the water's going to come back and then some, along with the storm surge. So, yeah. I mean, there's probably a little bit of an opportunity to go out with your metal detector and, you know, find some little treasures, but you don't want to hang out too long because the water will come back, and it will come back with a vengeance.
Yeah, that seems like one of the most insane games of chicken ever. I do not think I would want to play that one. I mean, I do actually. I shouldn't say that. I do have some friends down in Florida that were at least sheltering in place, I guess, and insisting on staying down there, whether they thought they were in no serious danger, because depending on where they live, or you know, mm-hmm. they're just the type of people that insist on staying with the fort, basically. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, it's a tough call, because a lot of people I know in Texas were kind of just sitting around drinking beer, saying they were going to watch the hurricane come in. And then a lot of them ended up regretting it, because then they ended up stuck in shelters without power. And they could have avoided all that by, you know, just evacuating ahead of time. But then Florida, after seeing Texas happen, tried to evacuate. And it's like the storm kind of chased the evacuees up the panhandle. So I guess they had a lot of traffic jams and stuff leading towards, like, Georgia and Alabama. So hopefully a lot of those people along the coastline there don't get stuck in traffic while the hurricane makes landfall.
Yeah, that would probably be the worst. I mean, even worse than being in your house when it hits us, you know, and, you know, despite whatever damage you're going to receive there, is being stuck in your car somewhere on a road where you have, like, no escape mm-hmm. route, because, you know, there's all these other cars around you. Yeah, that would be horrible, man. But I can imagine. Yeah, it really was. It was insane. It was like, you know, the little bit I paid attention, it was like pretty much after the evacuation warning started coming out, and everybody actually started taking them seriously because of what happened in Houston. Because I know a lot of people that over the years who've lived in Florida who kind of just, like, shrug a lot of this off, because, you know, you get these threats all the time. And then when nothing actually happens, mm-hmm. it's kind of like, you know, so put your guard down a little bit, so you're not really prepared when these type of things happen. You know, I'm sure that's kind of the idea that was in the back of the head of those friends of yours in Texas who were just drinking beer, saying, you know, we're just going to watch it. Like, basically, we're watching some kind of sporting event or something. You know, we're just going to watch, go out and hang out, watch it happen, you know, not thinking. But then when it does happen, it's... Yeah, like I said, I mean, when I suffered through Sandy up here on Long Island, because it pretty much ripped straight through here, and we were, you know, I just stayed in my house. I was like, you know, what are you going to do at this point? You make the decision, you're here. You know, for us, it was even worse. You're on an island too, because if it had hit any further west, it could have taken the bridges out, and there's only, like, I think, two or three bridges that connect us to the mainland. So if you take that, if those had get taken out, like, that's like one of the worst case scenarios, because then we're just stuck out here. And yeah, man. So Well, everybody who is still down there, I hope they stay safe. And hopefully this thing will change paths again and, you know, go out to sea or something. Worms.
Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateurs, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
We're back, Jeremy here with Shane, and we were talking hurricanes in the last segment, and I realized we were talking about that, and there was actually a story I had, which despite the you know, destruction and tragedy that's going on, unfortunately for a lot of people, there was some humor that I found in it, and we didn't even mention that. And there was a story apparently coming out of Florida that some police in what county was it now? I think I lost it. Pasco police, so Pasco County, I guess. Actually put a warning out on their Twitter for people to not shoot into the hurricane, because apparently there was a Facebook event started, you know, that said, you know, people were going to shoot at the it's actually called the Shoot at Hurricane Irma on September 10th. And according to the sheriff, I think like 53,000 people who clicked interested, and 25,000 people clicked going to the event. And the guy who created it did say that, you know, he was just kind of blowing off some steam and he didn't really have any intentions of going out there and shooting into the hurricane.
True. I've seen other events similar to this involving the hurricane.
Yes, I have too. And there's been stuff like this in the past, but there are actually, you know, it's kind of like, you know, why are there warning labels when you read warning labels on things? You go, gosh, why would there have to be this warn? Like, how is there anybody out there that's that stupid? The answer is almost always yes. Because one of my favorite comedians, Bill Engvall, one of the blue collar comedy guys, you know, with Jeff Foxworthy and all them. I found him years before he actually hooked up with them and started doing all that stuff. But he was always a clean comic, but he always made me laugh. And he has a whole bit about that. Like, he basically, his whole shtick was the here's your sign thing, which basically, you know, stupid people should have to wear signs so they won't bother the rest of us. And that's basically why there are, you know, that's why you have warning labels on things. You know, he has bits about, you know, somebody coming in with their hands all cut up, and you know, telling their friends, you know, listen, man, if you're gonna go change change the belt on a fan in your car, you need to turn the motor off first, because if you actually read the inside of the fan belt, it actually instructs you to, you know, must, you know, turn the motor off first. And whenever you see something like that, you know, there has to be a story, because there's usually not warnings like that unless somebody tried to sue somebody else because they did exactly that. So, while it does seem that, you know, you would figure most people would be just doing this or just saying they were going and not actually going to go do this, there's people that have done it. And because people don't think, they just think, oh, I'll just shoot it into the hurricane and what could happen? It's like, oh yeah, like they put this, the sheriff's department put this out there on Twitter and warning people not to actually go do this. And some of the responses were basically like, yeah, sure, shooting bullets into a thing, something with 100+, you know, 130 plus mile an hour wind swirling around, like, what could go wrong? You know,
well, I mean, even 130 mile per hour wind isn't going to affect the bullet so much as to like turn it the other direction. But there are debris flying around and stuff that could cause ricochets. But you know how they say, you know your target, what's behind it, and what's beyond it. So
well,
that
exactly
applies in a hurricane.
Yeah, well, yeah, but in a hurricane, it was in a hurricane. You can't know the answer to that question, all those questions at all times, because what's behind what you're shooting at can change at any moment. You know, that's the point. Like, I understand the aerodynamics of it, but exactly, you know, it could hit anything, and you know, basically just end up just killing somebody randomly because you thought it would be a good idea.
Shooting at a hurricane doesn't affect it one bit.
Yeah.
So that's not going to do anything to the hurricane, and it might actually cause a ricochet back at you or someone else.
Yeah. I mean, that would be, you know, I don't necessarily believe in karma, but I mean, if you're going to shoot into a hurricane and you end up killing yourself, you know, you kind of had that coming, I think.
Yeah, I'll chalk that up under the Darwin's Law or whatever that is.
Exactly. Yeah. That would definitely win the award, I would think, for the year.
The Darwin Award. Nominate them for the Darwin Award.
Yeah. But you were saying that you actually checked and there was an update. You said it's Irma's hitting down Tampa now, I guess.
Yeah, last I had checked earlier before dinner, it had slammed into Key West and there was a few deaths. And it looks like now it is... it's nearing Tampa Bay. I don't know if it's actually going to make landfall there or not, or if it's just going to pass by. But it has looked like it has been downgraded to a Category 3. The winds are currently at 100 miles per hour, which is about 30 miles per hour less than it was around dinner time today. So that's on the East Coast. So
good news, I think,
you know,
hopefully.
Yeah, good. Looks like it's better than expected, at least. But now it will probably travel up the panhandle, and hopefully all those people who were fleeing from the hurricane can continue to do so and get away.
Yeah. Hopefully. As we were saying before, it's nothing worse than being trapped in your car in traffic on a normal basis, you know, trapped in that situation. Mm-hmm. I don't envy any of those people. But yeah, hopefully everybody stays safe. Any hoodle. So we did have a couple of stories though tonight, and one of them you brought to us was about someplace near and dear to your heart, right? Amazon. You want to tell us about that?
I did find an article on fee.org, which is a good site to find some stuff like libertarian oriented articles. And this one says eventually Amazon will fail, and that's a good thing. The market will see to Amazon just as Amazon saw to its predecessors. Now, before I get into the bulk of the article, we've heard a lot of stories about how Amazon recently took over Whole Foods and they're going to try to start using drones for deliveries, and people are afraid that Amazon's going to take over the world. But I can tell you, as someone who's on the inside, there's a lot of ways in which they could be a lot better at trying to do that. And I think any really good competitor could come along and do certain things better. I'm not going to go into too much detail because I still work there. And, you know, there's always hope that they can, you know, kind of improve on some of these things. But as far as the article goes, it says the Federal Trade Commission has cleared the merger between Amazon and Whole Foods, sparking yet more fears that the retail giant is becoming too big. Even as commercial enterprises adjust, politicians and bureaucrats in America, Europe, and elsewhere are sounding the alarm about how big companies like Amazon and Google are shutting out smaller competitors and hogging the marketplace. But their worries are misplaced. The market will see to Amazon just as Amazon sought its predecessors. If a company delivers huge amounts of value to consumers at a price that suits them and revolutionizes the way we do business, government can see it as a problem that's got to be stopped. What politicians don't seem to grasp is that today's big companies were yesterday's small companies that upended yesterday's big companies. Amazon, Google, and Netflix are now big companies that all started by creating new markets and new opportunities that proved the undoing of the companies and services that came before. All three began as startups, not offshoots, from a dominant market company. Google was founded in a garage by an entrepreneur maxing out his credit cards. Now we can hardly remember a time before Google was a verb. In fact, dominant market actors rarely last for long. Incredible as it may seem, at this very moment, Google will fade into memory someday, and the firms that will arise to supplant it may not have been founded yet. The new industries replace old ones with new products or services that we find more valuable. Even the most innovative companies find it difficult to stay in the race when confronted by a truly innovative competitor. Harvard business professor Clayton Christensen calls the innovator's dilemma. It is much easier to innovate outside the confines of large companies. Amazon is a prime example. Prime. I wonder if they intended that pun.
Ba-dum-bum.
All right. First, an old industry of small bookstores with an eclectic offerings was largely replaced in the 1990s by big box bookstores like Borders, where you could get the latest novel by your favorite author and browse through a huge inventory of other books and merchandise. The bookshops were so dominant that the romantic comedy You've Got Mail about the problem of big box stores was a big hit. But then Amazon, a small internet startup company, started selling books online, soon undercutting the cost of the big box stores and delivering books straight to your door. You couldn't browse the books themselves, but the online companies offered useful information in the form of customer reviews and book suggestions based on your browsing and recent purchases. As it grew, Amazon applied the same business model to other goods besides books and created new markets in online book publishing and web services. Now, Amazon is a world leader, having long since outcompeted Borders into oblivion. Cue the biggest threat of all, political predators. Recently, Amazon, like Google, drew political fire and worries over market dominance when it moved to acquire Whole Foods. Another startup to success story is entertainment company Netflix. But wait, remember Blockbuster? The video rental store chain was once so prominent that The Simpsons joked that a lost child at a concert would become the company's property.
I remember Yet it was Blockbuster. Bankrupted. I worked there.
Yeah, I do too. Ah. Yet it was bankrupted by Netflix, which is now producing its own original content and competing directly with established TV networks, as is Amazon, of course. Clearly, we don't need government to constrain large companies. The markets and innovation will do that job just fine. In the meantime, Amazon cut prices at Whole Foods almost immediately. That's the market working for consumers. Yeah. And it will be interesting to see what Amazon does with this whole Foods acquisition. And the drone program too. It's kind of exciting because they could be delivering food to your door, but if they don't do it efficiently, then someone will come along and beat them to it.
Yeah, and I think that's I think that, you know, that the article brings up a lot of good points that I think a lot of people do miss, because so many people get swept up in that idea of like this one one gigantic corporation or the couple of mega corporations that are essentially going to take over the world. They don't see that, you know, they don't think about the mm-hmm. things that it wasn't that long ago that, you know, really was. It was 10, 15 years ago that Blockbuster was still, you know, I mean, I remember working back there way back in, you know, around 2000. Yeah. Almost 20 years ago at this point. When there was other chains coming in, it was still like, you know, worrying about a threat of other chains taking over, not something like Amazon or, you know, not something like Netflix necessarily. But, mm-hmm. you know, there's always that constant threat so much as there can be when government doesn't get in the way with the regulations favorable to the bigger companies that keep other people out of the marketplace altogether. But barring that, there's always going to be somebody else with a better idea or how to improve on your idea. And just because a company is huge today does not mean they're going to be huge tomorrow. It will be interesting. Worms. We shall return to this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
And we're back. Last segment, we were talking about Amazon and how it's taking over the world, but not really, because somebody's going to come replace it eventually, most likely. unless Amazon is indeed Amazon or Google is indeed Skynet, I'm pretty sure that within another decade or so, one of those two names may be a maybe not a decade, maybe two decades tops. One of those two names, at the very least, will be a pretty distant memory, because that's just the way things work, you know. Like I was saying before we went to break, there's always somebody with either a better idea, or at the very least a way to improve your idea, and as long as you're not trapped behind the horrors of IP law, and you can actually get a hold of other people's ideas and make something useful without having to deal with all that garbage, then yeah. Because again, you know, I mentioned that too, about how government gets in the way and stops stuff from like that from happening. But aside from that, you know, the less regulation, then the less oversight like that, the more true competition you can have. And, you know, it's always, regardless of if the person who is creating the product or making the product better is doing it for their own benefit, you know, as in, you know, making something so that they can make money off of, in order to do that, they necessarily have to be making other people's lives better by providing a product and or service that other people are benefiting from, because otherwise they wouldn't be giving this person their money for that. Right. So, you know.
Value is subjective.
Well, this is true, but it's still that, you know, people are, you know, it's making the world essentially better with that competition. So, you know, it's not to worry, you know, all those people who worry about Amazon taking over the world. Yeah, they may take it over for a little while, but somebody will come knock them out. Just the way things work.
Not for long, don't worry.
Exactly.
And as far as IP, that's just another trade barrier that stifles innovation.
Exactly. And, barrier to entry, baby.
If everything was open source, if everything was open source, you'd see how fast innovation could actually go.
Yeah, exactly. That's why, that's why, for the most part, in the, you know, technological world, that still advances, you know, still advances quicker than most other places, because it is still the least regulated. You know, it's still regulated, obviously, because everything's pretty much everything, including your toilet. You know, what kind of toilet you're allowed to have in your house is regulated by the government. But it's one of the least regulated ones, which is why the prices on that stuff continues to drop. You know, like computers and TVs and stuff like that. You know, over the years, continues to drop as stuff continues to get bigger and better. Anyway, the prices still continue to go down because it's not stifled as much by those insane regulations and stuff like that. But anyway, you know, so we were talking about Amazon, and before we head off into the break at the end of the hour here, I did have one other thing that actually caught my eye. As we're speaking of Amazon, shift quickly to the Amazon, and this story just made me sad, and was actually there's the what they call the uncontacted tribes down in the Amazon area. People who have actually lived their entire lives and generations without ever, you know, really having any contact with, you know, horrible humans like us. And they've led relatively, I guess, peaceful lives because, you know, they don't bother anybody and nobody bothers them. And they're supposed to be protected down in, I think it's this one valley in Brazil, right? Where they're supposed to actually in the Brazilian constitution, and it's actually laid out that these people in this one particular area are supposed to be protected, and it's actually considered to be like the highest population of uncontacted tribes in the world, the majority of them seem to be in this area, and unfortunately, there's now reports that a bunch of these people have been killed by a bunch of miners who allegedly were out at a bar and bragging about the fact, you know, claiming that these savages tried to attack them, which is insane because most of the time you see, whenever you see videos and stuff like this, if they try to attack anybody, it's because they have no idea. Like, they're uncontacted. They don't really understand modern technology. Planes and stuff freak them out. But, you know, if you're just hanging out in your territory in the woods, so in the jungle somewhere where you're, you know, supposed to be left alone, and these miners and loggers and stuff who are coming and trying to take over the area are just ended up killing these people. It's so sad, man. It's, I don't put much faith in the law, but hopefully the people that were responsible for this will actually be brought to justice of some kind. These people just want to be left alone, and I can't blame them. We'll be back in the second hour. So, more.
Are you tired of driving your kids to Gigi Allen's grave only to be unable to find the grave because some dick stole the headstone? Well, there is a solution. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app for Android will give you door-to-grave directions. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app uses advanced GPS protocols to guide you with voices to the exact patch of dust and grass where Gigi took his final dirt nap. Bring the kids. Do some needle drops at the Gigiest place on Earth. Gigi always had a huge underground following, but it's even bigger now that he's literally underground. So it's no surprise that lots of folks today take a pilgrimage to Gigi's grave. But getting there wasn't easy. Until this app. Forget Graceland, forget the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Those are plastic places for old people with jobs. Hell, even CBGB's is gone, and that former hallowed ground is now a yuppie coffee bar. The real rock and roll mecca is an unmarked patch of grass in Littleton, New Hampshire, and our free app will show you how to get there. Get the Find Gigi Allen's Grave app today. Even if you're not planning to go there soon, the app is fun. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License, and it's from the good people at Beast Lick Internet Policy Commission Outreach Team, who also brought you Fiend Phone, the Freedom Fiends radio app, BIPCOT, MeowBit, and of course, Truth, Justice, American Way. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app is free. Get it today on the Google Play Store or on Amazon. Your family will thank you. And don't forget to rate and review. Worms, eating Gigi Allen's face.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. As always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows for use by anyone except governments and government agents. To learn more, go to BIPCOT.org. All right, and we're back. We're still here, the Freedom Fiends, with Jeremy and Shane.
What's up?
And I was, during the break, trying to get some updates on Hurricane Irma, and I have an update for our update, and it now appears to be a Category 2 storm with winds below 100 miles an hour. And Tampa Bay is still in danger of storm surge and some wind damage, but it looks like, you know, it's going to be hopefully over soon for them as the hurricane travels north.
Well, that's great news. Yeah, we were talking about that in the last hour, and you know, I think we had mentioned that you know, the fact that it had shifted, because you know they were talking about this catastrophic storm that was supposed to hit, because it was a Category 4 when it, at least they were talking about that when it hit Key West, or at least when it was near Key West,
right.
And then all of a sudden it shifted drastically and headed northward. And it appears that, at least so far, especially with these past two updates that you've given, that shift actually decreased the power of the storm significantly. So hopefully that continues to happen over the next few hours.
Yeah.
And less people will be in danger, and less people will have... Well, you know, they may have to deal with some, you know, a little wetness, but they won't be any too worse for wear afterwards.
Well, there are 3.5 million people currently without power in the southwestern Florida area, which includes Tampa Bay, I believe. So hopefully they've got generators and things like that, and that they're prepared for a storm such as this.
Yeah, well, one can only hope. I mean, you think living down in those places that people would be prepared because this type of thing, unfortunately, does happen quite regularly. But that does, the whole idea of being prepared like that does actually tie into the story that we had that we were going to start off this hour with. And who knows, we may actually go on with this one for a while, because it ties in quite nicely with this. And it's actually a topic that's been very interesting to me for quite a long time now, too, because I've been trying to figure out ways of how I can eventually be living like this myself. And this actually comes from, I think I found this on Lou Rockwell originally, but it took me back to the link to the original article, which was on backdoorsurvival.com. And the headline is, "Best Places to Live Off-Grid, the Best Off-Grid U.S. States and a Few International Options." And, you know, it goes on to talk about the fact that, you know, people, there are, you know, places that unfortunately make it almost, you know, well, basically illegal to do a lot of this stuff, because there are stories, and it does mention it even in some of the states that they're talking about that have that are ranked highly as far as the criteria that they're using, which the considerations that they're saying you should take into account, which all of them, you know, we'll go through some of them more extensively than others, but just overall, you know, they all kind of make sense. Like, obviously climate, you know, you're gonna want to take that into account, not only for what it would end up, you know, essentially costing you to keep yourself warm and or cold depending on which way you go, but also what type of food you can grow. Because if you're going to be attempting to live off grid, or at least as off grid as possible, you know, you're most likely going to be trying to grow at most, if not all, of your own food. So that, you know, you need to take that in consideration, because as it points out, you know, some people coming from like the Northeast may not realize that, you know, if you go too far south, it seems like, oh great, you know, it's warmer weather, so you can grow things longer. Yeah, but you can't grow a lot of the things that you grow up by where you're used to coming from, because it's a completely different climate, and the same things that'll grow, you know, a lot of stuff like that. Like, there's a reason, like, you know, what is it, like potatoes, aren't they all up in Idaho and stuff like that? You know, like, it's up in,
yeah, they seem to be more northern. Yeah,
because they're hardier. They're meant to survive. You know, they came from the big, you know, the big potato famine in Ireland that led to all those problems. And you know, that type of weather, it's in colder, you know, wetter weather where they grow a lot. So, you know, you bring it down south, there's food like that, it's good. It you know, whether it's nourishing, you know, it's definitely nourishing and it fills you up and stuff like that. All that type of heartier foods, yeah, they don't grow as well down south. So you have to take that into consideration. And then, right, you know, then another thing is obviously like water access or the rainfall too. And again, not just necessarily for water for you to consume, but also for your, you know, whatever type of stuff you're trying to grow. You know, you need to make sure, you know, because there's plenty of places, especially in the Southwest, where in like the desert, oh yeah, you can go try off-gridding out there, because the state governments won't really bother you, because it's so sparsely populated. They're just like, ah, they just leave it alone, because, well, yeah, you can get land cheap and there's less regulations to deal with, but there's no darn water. And then you have to spend...
Right, water's limited resource.
Exactly. So then you have to spend more of your money or time or whatever and invest it in some type of irrigation system or some way to keep the water constantly. Whereas if you go somewhere that has a wetter climate, you have to deal with that less. So, you know, if you're going to go try again, if you're going to be trying to live off grid or at least as close to it as possible, yeah, having access to fresh, clean water that you can use for a multitude of reasons is definitely something you need to take into consideration. So that's why, you know, there's plenty of people that tried doing the off grid thing in the desert. I think wasn't Kokesh's thing part of that supposed to be, that wasn't that his whole idea he was supposed to be doing when he was doing his earth ship, which I think he's given up on since. I don't remember if he was still doing that when he was still supposed to be running for president now in 2020.
Yeah.
But
I was not aware of all of the details involving that, but I believe it was in like a drier climate.
Well, it was definitely in the desert, but I'm pretty sure it was. I was trying to remember if that was meant to be off grid too, but I think it was. But there's plenty of people who do that type of stuff. But yeah, it's something you definitely want to take into consideration.
Mm-hmm. I know some of our friends in the Southwest, like Lewis, you might be familiar with. He has like a water collection system where he collects his rainwater, I believe, and reuses that. So there's things like that that the people in the Southwest have to do to make up for the difference in rainfall.
Well, yeah, of course, there are ways to get around it, so you can, do it. It's just more difficult, and you may have to, like I said, you just may have to invest more time, money, and or whatever than you would otherwise in another area, where you wouldn't have to deal with that. So that's something you wouldn't have to deal with at all. Mm-hmm. But then again,
in the Midwest, the Midwest, I can personally vouch for the fact that the Great Lakes provide enough what they call lake effect snow and precipitation that you would be able to collect plenty of rainwater here, or you wouldn't even have to necessarily collect it because it's so abundant.
Yeah, exactly. What is that thing? The thing about real estate? Location, location, location. It really comes down to, taking into consideration, because it's what you want to, how much time and money and whatever you want to invest in one thing versus another, where you may see the benefits living in the desert for all these other reasons, then you have to look at that. And if that's something you're willing to deal with, then sure. On the flip side of that, though, it's also, rain collection sounds all good and wonderful, but it depends on where you live, because there have been people who've been arrested for that in different places. I think Kentucky was one of those places, although that Kentucky actually is on the list of the nine states they list here in this article. It's one of those things you still have to look out for. Which actually brings us right to the next part of the criteria, which is laws and building codes. So, again, if you're going to go trying to live somewhere, obviously, unless you're already living somewhere extremely rural to begin with, you're most likely going to have to relocate from where you currently are in order to pursue a lifestyle such as this. So it's always a really good idea, especially even me who hates government as much as I do, and tries to disregard as many laws as I possibly can without having a gun pointed in my face directly. It's a good idea to take a look at the state and local laws of wherever the places you are considering moving to attempt to live off grid in any capacity, to see what you run the risk of being in trouble with the law for simply trying to provide for yourself, which is completely asinine when you really think about it, but unfortunately this is the world we live in. That this actually needs to be said for certain people, because they really don't see this. It's like, people just, if you just want to be left alone and try to actually be as self-sufficient as possible, you actually have to take in consideration where you're living to do that, because some places may actually make it illegal. By ridiculous laws and regulations, effectively make it illegal for you to be self-sufficient, which seems to be very antithetical to freedom. I don't know about you, man, but
I agree. So. And they do that in more ways than one. It can involve being off of the electrical grid, which is illegal in some places, or it can be just collecting rainwater, which is illegal in some places. So, yeah, location, location, location.
Exactly. So if you're planning on investigating a lifestyle like this, then you definitely need to scout that stuff out, and again, put that into your cost benefit analysis and weigh it out. That's something I'm actually dealing with currently right now, because as I'm winding things up here in New York, I've got only a few more. I realized that tonight as I was making out my invoices for the next couple of weeks, that I'm only going to do one more round of these after this. I'm that close to being done with this chapter of my life.
Wow.
But as I'm working on trying to, wrapping that up and hopefully finally getting this stupid court case behind me, and trying to get myself out of this state, I'm not looking to go off grid just yet, although it is something I've had in the back of my mind for quite a while. I would like to try to accomplish it in some capacity, or at least get as close to it as I can, at some point down the road. But even without that right now, just getting out of here, like, it's the same type of thing. I have to take all these things into consideration where I'm taking my kids, and what laws I have to deal with and what regulations we have to deal with. Like, you really got to take all these things into account. It's not just, obviously, money plays a part in it, and it's, where work can be found definitely plays a big, big part of that too. But, all these other things, like, what you'll have to put up with, what you can and can't do, and what you can live, you know, when you look at that, it's like, well, what can I live with? What can I not live with? But we will talk more about this when we return from the market. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
I love the Freedom Fiends, but in this modern busy world, I just don't have time to listen all the way through every episode.
There is a solution. Go to the World Wide Web and log on to digest.freedomfiends.com and subscribe to the Freedom Fiends Digest. Digest.freedomfiends.com has 20-minute best-ofs of each episode.
20-minute best-ofs? Digest.freedomfiends.com sounds great. How much does it cost?
That's the best part. It's free. And if you listen at 1.5 speed, they're only 13 minutes long. Plus, the episodes are only about 15 megs, which is great, because I have a limited data plan.
Wow. I'm at digest.freedomfiends.com right now. It's so simple to use. And anyone who doesn't have 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends is a big old statist.
I agree with you about people who can't find 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends Digest. That's digest.freedomfiends.com.
And we're back. And in the last segment, we were talking about this article from Backdoor Survival about the best places in the U.S. and elsewhere, a couple of places elsewhere, to live off-grid. And we were working our way through the list of criteria they laid out for you to take into consideration when you are considering, you know, making a move to take on a lifestyle such as this. And so far we had gone kind of briefly through the first couple, which were climate, rainfall and water access, and laws and building codes. And to finish out this list, hopefully a little more quickly, but some of the other things I've listed are like the community, which, you know, obviously if you're trying to go off grid and as far away from society as possible, then you don't have to worry about this as much. But even then, you're likely still going to have to go back into quote unquote town every once in a while for supplies or stuff like that. Even if you are working yourself towards as close to 100% sustainability as you can get, even if that's your end goal, along the way you're still going to need that. So it helps to at least be able to tolerate the people that you're going to have to interact with, and in most cases where you're going to be a little closer to some other people, because there are plenty of people that try to live somewhat or as close to totally off grid as they can in, you know, the already existing communities. That does occur too. So, you know, it helps if you're if you actually, you know, like the people that you're going to be around with. You know, it's like the final line of the paragraph on that is, if it seems like you'll have major conflict with your community, don't move in. Seems like, you know, pretty sound advice to me.
Right. Yeah, and most of the places on this list do mention communities that are kind of already leaning towards self-sufficient and off-grid, and they do have their own little, like kind of a market, like community market, like farmers markets and stuff like that, where like the local supply chain is already kind of in effect and doesn't have to be established. It's already established.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're going to look to move to one of those places, then yeah, you should probably check out who's in those places and, you know, make sure you can get along with them, because otherwise it's going to be not too much fun. So definitely something that goes high on the list for making sure you're aware of before you go moving off to go live off grid. The next one is power potential, which, you know, if you're trying to get off the main system and off the grid, then yeah, what are you going to do? You're going to use solar. You're going to use some type of water system, you know, whatever it is to generate power. Well, then again, you know, if you're going to try to use water, then that goes back to the rainfall and water access. You need to make sure you're in a location that you have plenty of access to water to be able to pull that off. And if you're going to do solar, then obviously, you know, that limits your choices too, because whereas, you know, someplace like California could be great for doing solar because, well, a lot of the places in California, it's sunny most of the time, so you can draw in lots of power that way. But if you move a couple of states up north to Washington, you know, a lot of places where it rains all the time, well, it's not going to be as effective. So there you would have, you know, you'd have much better ability to grow stuff because all the, you know, natural rainfall you would get up in Washington, but you wouldn't be able to take advantage of the solar. So, you know, like, again, you know, if you have an idea of what type of system you're going to be running in order to generate power for yourself, then yeah, definitely need to take these things into consideration. Let's see. The next one is, which actually ties into one of our topics from the first hour, which is environmental threats, because, you know, you have to contend with things like tornadoes and hurricanes and floods and wildfires and earthquakes, you know, in different places across the country. So you really need to, you know, take that in consideration too, because again, there's plenty of people who have tried this and or are trying this in different locations, including places that are prone to different things. Like, you know, there are people that try to live more off grid in Florida. And you know, that may actually, they may actually be slightly better off in this situation where, as you were mentioning earlier, there's already almost 3.5 million people without power already. Mm-hmm. You know, that was one thing during Sandy. A lot of people around here weren't prepared for that. There were some people that had generators, but not enough. And most people were just like, I don't know what to do without my power, without my TV. I'm lost. So,
right.
But, I hear the music, so we will have to continue this in the next segment.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Freedom Fiends! Helping the helpless! Freedom Fiends! Saving the universe! Freedom Fiends! Doing the things that I've
done! Saving the world from the state! Fighting the forces of hate!
The beans on the clock,
ain't never gonna stop, and
the glass go blow. Meow. And we're back. It's Freedom Fiends, Jeremy. Still Jeremy. That's still Shane. And
hello.
we've been talking about this article from Backdoor Survival about living off grid, and we were still running through the criteria they were listing for you know, for what you should take into consideration before you take on such an endeavor. And the last one we were talking about was the environmental threats, which, you know, again, you got to take into consideration, you know, things like where hurricanes are likely to hit, or you know, Tornado Alley, which basically runs from South Dakota down to Texas. You know, so you have to take in consideration all the areas around there, stuff like that. And then even in other places like further up north where you don't get as many of these, you still got to worry about, you know, heavy snowstorms and flooding after snowstorms and things melting and stuff like that. So always things to take in consideration. So that's definitely want to look out for. And the last one they have listed here is cost, which obviously, you know, is going to be a big factor. Depending on how much money you have saved up, what you have, you know, what capability you have of making more money along the way, and, you know, putting all these other things together, where you want to end up, how, you know, what you need to accomplish that. And even, you know, like I said, even if your goal is close to 100% sustainability at some point, it's still going to involve a lot of money out of pocket up front, or, well, maybe, you know, maybe not necessarily a lot of money depending on what route you go, but it's still going to cost money to get to that point. So yeah, you definitely got to take that in consideration. So, you know, where, you know, you hopefully you can find cheap property a lot of places, you know, you can knock that off your list and then start looking at all these other factors. You know, like, obviously some places have cheap property, but then they nail you with horrible property taxes, which is just a pain in the butt. You know, so that all plays into it.
Yeah, yeah. I know that we have a relatively low cost of living here in the Midwest, but we also still get hurricanes. I think the Midwest is at the end of Hurricane Alley, and we get our fair share.
Yeah. Well, see, there you go. You
know, or tornado.
Tornado Alley. Yeah, it's I mean, there's definitely risks wherever you go. So again, you got to kind of take that into consideration and figure out what makes most sense for you. And but as we started off saying, you know, I mean, this is something that I've long thought of, and I hope to get closer and closer to that. I mean, I don't know if I plan on, you know, completely living off of solar power, being completely off grid. I mean, it sounds like a nice dream. I'd like to be able to get to some point like that, but if I don't think that really goes hand in hand with my other ideas, such as doing enough farming to be able actually to make a profit off of it and doing the whole bison thing. I'm thinking that may be kind of difficult to do completely off grid, at least in the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's still something I've taken into consideration. And as it turns out, the list they have of the nine best places in the States to test this out, the top one they have here is actually one of the places I have considered, and I do know a couple of people down there. And it's kind of interesting the way they talk about it, because it fits in with what I've heard. And that would be Tennessee, which, you know, gets on their little rating scale here, gets five stars for the climate, five stars for the water access, four stars for the laws and stuff like that, which I'm assuming is you know, the least amount of regulations. It's not like, yay, lots of laws, woohoo. Four stars for the power potential, and three stars for the environmental threats. So, you know, and it even says, like it says, Tennessee is simply a natural choice for off-gridders. It has a warm, wet, long growing season. It has rich soil on the clay side, which is at least better than sandy soils to adjust, which, as somebody who lives on extremely sandy soil on Long Island, I can definitely attest to. Fresh water runs down from the Appalachians, and land is cheap. And it also goes on to say that the community in most areas of the state has remained rural and self-sufficiency minded. There isn't a large off-grid community here, isn't as large of an off-grid community here as in other states on the list, but the laws remain fairly flexible, and straw bake houses have gone up successfully. Unfortunately,
straw bale,
that makes a lot more sense. Unfortunately, at least one straw bale house has completely destroyed by a tornado. Well, yeah, that's gonna, you know, it's not really tornado safe, but, you know, again, cost benefit analysis, that's the risk you gotta take. which is the main disaster in the state, making off-grid home with unusual materials, which is tornado resistant, is a big challenge. Yes, obviously. I mean, unless you're going to try, you know, unless you're going to get really creative, it's going to be kind of difficult. But again, that's something you got to need to take into consideration. But as far as the overall score, this does seem to be the highest one that they rank. And like I said, that's interesting, because I know people who do either live close to the hills out there in Tennessee on the east side of the state, or looking to relocate there and talking about doing stuff down there. And when I saw that, I was like, interesting. That's actually on my list. I may have to go check that out. That may actually put me closer to multiple goals. As far as I know, and as far as I've been told, you know, laws in general, at least on the east side of the state, because it's so rural over there in a lot of those places in the hills, they do even laws that are in place are not enforced as strictly. It's one of those places that people are kind of still left alone to do a lot of things. So I can see why it's so high on the list. And, you know, good for me. Woohoo. the second one they have on the list, which actually shocked me at first, but then it does actually kind of make sense because when I thought about it longer, is Oregon. Because, you know, I think of Oregon, I immediately go to Portland and think about how horribly progressive mm-hmm. that is and how they're trying to destroy everything. And then I have to remember, oh, wait a minute, young Nick lives on in another part of Oregon, which is completely different and is actually pretty rural. and, you know, they're rated, you know, they got like 3 stars in climate, but water access and the law, they get 5 stars. And power potential is only 3, but even though it is closer to Washington, they do get rain up there, which makes it good for growing seasons. According to this, I think it still says you can actually still do solar there too, just obviously it's not as much as you're going to get in California, but it's still possible to do there. The next one they have listed is Alaska, which obviously makes sense because it's a very sparsely populated state to begin with. And there's so many areas up there that I know most people just don't want to bother to go out to. So you could definitely live, pretty free, I guess, without being bothered by, like, you know, as long as you're outside of one, you know, on the outside of one of the big cities up there, you're not going to have to deal with too many people. So you're probably not going to have to deal with too many of the regulations and stuff. But then you got to deal with the cold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's probably why the climate only has 3 stars for Alaska.
Yeah. I mean, if you love hunting and fishing and stuff like that, and you don't mind a little cold weather, then yeah, it's probably great. You know, I mean, Alaska's a place that if I didn't have kids, I would probably consider going to. Because I don't mind the cold so much. And I think I would be quite all right with being up there, especially with the, you know, as free as you're allowed to be, you know, as far as freedom goes here.
Yeah.
You know, definitely. I would definitely consider it. And plus, from what I've heard, it's beautiful. I mean, you know, pictures and stuff, the videos I've seen, it's beautiful up there. So I could see why it would attract certain people. The next one they have is Nevada, which is. Someplace I never actually would have thought of, although again, it's because of the, you know, a lot of the desert area, you know, cause it talks about the fact that there's off grid communities in Nevada and Arizona and New Mexico, which is actually quite large. But again, those are people that are in the more desert areas that are willing to take it, you know, have take into account that they have to provide for more water than a lot of the other areas on this list you would have to. But it actually is, you know, there's a, I mean, it says the water is a serious issue, but the land in the desert is really, really cheap, and the regulations are also extremely low. And of course, and as it says, the solar power is near infallible there, because, well, yeah, it's sunny a lot. I mean, my dad lives out outside of Vegas, you know, and it regularly is 110 degrees in there for much of the year and sunny. So you could definitely get away with lots and lots of solar power. But then you also have to be keeping yourself cool on top of that. So, you know. It's doesn't mean as much if you're, you know, if you can provide solar power all the time, great. But if you have to use it to run air conditioning a lot,
that's or some, true.
You know, that's not really going to be that cost effective because that takes a lot of power to run those things. So, you know, again, that's probably why it's only got the three star on the climate, and it's only got 2 stars on the water access, obviously. But as far as laws and power potential goes, you know, they rank it very highly. So mm-hmm. it's, you know, considered a good place. The next one is Kentucky, which, again, close to Tennessee, same type of thing where it's, you know, it's warm and humid. So you get plenty of rainwater and, you know, long growing seasons, lots of cheap land. Much of it's still very rural already. Not many off-gridders have actually started in the area, so there aren't a lot of people who have already taken on the laws or lack thereof, because sometimes they, you know, governments like to try to create laws or use other laws to try to catch people who are getting away with not paying into their system, even though they're not actually doing anything wrong, even by the law standards. I've seen that happen too. So if there haven't been a lot of people who have actually already gone up against this, then there's still more potential for being caught. And there already have been some, you know, pretty big cases when people have actually been brought in for doing things, you know, victimless crimes, because there was the case, and I actually remember this one where there was a problem for a homeschooling family there, you know, which they were, you know, they're harassing him about. There was an Amish man who went to prison for selling herbal remedies.
Oh yeah,
you know, so. But, you know, otherwise, you know, and there's earthquake and tornado risks there. But the, you know, soil is great there. So good place to farm, which is a good thing for off-gridders. And we'll be back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Well. Meow.
And we're back for the final segment. And we've been talking this hour about an article from BackdoorSurvival.com on the best places to try to go live off-grid and get away from it all. And we were running down the list of states, and so we're getting shorter for time, so we'll have to speed through the rest of this. But some of the other places they listed as really good to go are Texas, which, you know, has pretty good climate as far as that goes. But of course, you know, if you're anywhere near Houston right now, you may not be thinking things are so wonderful. But Texas is a really big place, so overall, it's a decent place because I don't think there's any building regulations you really got to deal with and stuff like that. And they also list Ohio on here, Shane, you know something about at the current moment.
Yeah, it surprises me that Ohio's on this list because it's very populated. So I think as long as you're away from the populated centers, it's probably a good place to go.
Yeah, I mean, it even says in the article, Ohio is an unusual state to consider as off the grid, but it does have some bonuses because it has the somewhat harsh winters. But you know, one of the reasons I was drawn to it, it does have a very strong Amish presence, which you know, that they kind of keep the law at bay largely when it comes to agriculture and stuff like that. So down in the southern region, you know, down Dayton, south of Dayton, Columbus, and stuff like that, where a lot of them are populated, it's actually not so bad. But overall, in this article, it does mention a lot that, you know, you definitely want to be further away from most of the big cities in order to be able to pull this stuff off, because even places where there are laws against certain things, where they may not, you know, they may not bother you if you're out in the sticks, but if you're in the city, you're going to get harassed for it. So yeah, the closer you are, the harder it is to try. So yeah, you're definitely going to want to look for the more rural places to try this. The next one they have is Idaho, which, you know, has a lot of good things with, you know, again, being somewhat, you know, being pretty rural overall, so you have to deal with less, even if there are regulations, you may not be harassed as much for certain things, but you do have to deal with the fact that it gets kind of cold up there, you know. Same thing we were talking about Alaska before. It's got a nice bonuses, but you know, the cold weather, definitely have to take that into account, because, you know, again, that changes what you can grow, or at the very least it changes how much you have to spend on what you can grow, because yeah, you could put greenhouses up and you could try heating things, but then that costs money too. You know, so that always has to be taken into account. The next one on the list is actually home of another fiend, Randy England, Missouri, as he says it's supposed to be pronounced, which actually gets really high rankings on, you know, 5 stars on climate, water access, laws, and 4 stars on potential, on power potential and environmental threats. Which, you know, obviously you do have to deal with, you know, that's still down in tornado country, technically. But, you know, overall, a lot of other good things going on down there. I actually wouldn't have thought of that one either. I'd never even considered that. But apparently there's a lot of good reasons to check Missouri out if you're going to do stuff like that. And then the article, it doesn't go on to mention a few places outside the states, but it also, explains that, you know, for the most part, whatever supposed freedom we're supposed to have here, unfortunately, it can be worse than a lot of other places. So it does make sense that a lot of people would actually, you know, look to do it here rather than trying to go elsewhere where you have to deal with possibly even more oppressive laws on other things. But the few places they do list outside the states are Oceania down in New Zealand is actually a decent place, because the regulations aren't too bad. There actually is a large off-the-grid movement there already. And, you know, everybody speaks English, which is, you know, another thing, especially if you're leaving the States to go elsewhere, you know. And they also get a lot of their culture and stuff from over in Australia, which is already somewhat Americanized anyway. You know, so you got to take that into consideration, too, if you're leaving the States. Uruguay is on the list, which I believe Derek J. Freeman, our former or still, I don't even remember anymore, fiend, was living for a little while. Oh, yeah. And they have very lax laws on a lot of things. So that they have a up and growing community there. And surprisingly, Romania, of all places, actually has somewhat of an off-the-grid community and is actually set up as far as a lot of these rankings go that this article gave. So, yeah, man.
Interesting.
Lots of good stuff. And I'll definitely post this in the show notes. But we're running out of time. So thank you, Shane, for joining me tonight. It's been fun. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And for more of us, go to freedomfiends.com. Worms.
Worms.